Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser. Preds win again last night, down 4-1 in the third period against the reigning Stanley Cup champions. They come all the way back. They tie it up at 4. They win 40 seconds into overtime on a goal by Roman Josi. Point streak at 18 consecutive games. They are 16-0-2 during that stretch. And they put themselves in a position where the playoffs are almost a certainty at this point. I mean, it would take a pretty incredible collapse. They're 10 up on St. Louis with 10 games remaining. And they've got Arizona coming up on Thursday, Colorado in a huge test on Saturday. So the Predators in a great spot right now. Now 4 points up on Vegas, and only 4 points behind the Winnipeg Jets for third place in the Central Division. We're taking your thoughts on the Preds all show long, 615-737-1025. Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com will join us later this hour, right around sometime in the neighborhood of 7:30, 7:45, and he'll be here until 9 o'clock talking all things Tennessee Titans. So looking forward to that coming up with PK. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Adam in Portland. Adam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Robbie, man. Hey, dude, did that not, like, for 2 seconds feel like Dallas when you're like, oh, God, it's 3-0? Well, I'm an idiot for feeling like it's the same. This is not the same team, dude. This is different. Like, they are nasty. And that wasn't like they came back against some chumps, man. They didn't come back against, you know, some of these dudes we pushed over on the street. They come back against the champs. So, it's wild, man. I don't even know what to make of them. I don't think we've ever seen a hockey team like this. Like, that's this young. Like, it's not like we have a bunch of $9-10 million guys. We got a couple, but like, this, it's all young dudes, and everybody, I mean, Mark Drakowski or whatever, he ends up starting the scoring last night. Like, that's awesome. Like, it's a different dude every single night, and that's what's incredible about the streak. So I really don't know what to make of the team. Like, I almost wrote them off after Dallas, which is the, you know, emotional fan in me.
Well, I think everybody did.
Like they're amazing, dude. This is an amazing team to watch. They are so much fun to watch.
Yep, thanks for the call, Adam. I mean, I think everybody, for the most part, pretty much wrote them off after Dallas. And what to make of them now? Look, Joe, I think what to make of them now is pretty simple. They're a good hockey team. I mean, it's pretty clear at this point. They're 16-0-2. I've talked about it before. The numbers, the underlying metrics, anything you really want to point to shows you that this is not a fluke and that they're good. I mean, they're a good hockey team. And what exactly is that going to translate to in the postseason? I don't know. I mean, they're good hockey teams all the time. They get beat in the first round and it's one and done. You know, I think some of that's going to be matchup dependent, and we've gone through those matchups, like some of them more than I do others. But what I make of the group right now, Joe, is they're good. I mean, this is a good hockey team. I think we're past the point of, man, this is just kind of out of nowhere. I mean, 18 games is a long time. That's a significant chunk of the season.
Yeah, no doubt. And so, yeah, look, again, it's not smoke and mirrors. They're a good hockey team. How good, you know, how does it translate to the playoffs? You know, what's the matchup? I mean, all those things we don't know. But, I mean, this is an incredible run. Look, I do think that the last time, and I wore the shirt yesterday, the Vibin shirt, you know, the last time that the Preds had, they had a great second half. They had a heck of a run. It wasn't this, but it was good. It was really good.
Yep.
And I think that was a good team going to the playoffs. That was a good team. I mean, they gave the Hurricanes a very good series. So, you know, it's not like it's been that long, but this is different in a number of ways. This team is better than that team. And also, it's just the fact that it's just a fresh start this year. And it's supposed to be like, the, you know, this is supposed to be the one year where you're like, okay, you might have to eat some dirt this year, you know, I mean, and instead it's this. So what does that mean for the future? I don't know. I mean, the one thing that Adam said there, you know, and as we've talked about, it's actually, I mean, it's really not a lot of young guys.
No,
it's, you know, like young, you know, there's some younger guys, and then there's definitely some of the most important players on this team are older.
Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in Weston. Weston, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. Kind of like piggybacking off of Adam, like one thing I've noticed about this team is we found their identity. Like, I mean, this is going back to, if you go back into the early days of Barry Trotz when he finally made it to playoff contender, I mean, this is his bread and butter. rough them up, you get physical, and you just pound away at the net. And now that Bruno is kind of doing that, I mean, I'm glad Florida fired him back in the day. So, I mean, now we're capitalizing off of his coaching ability. So I'll hang up and listen, guys.
Yep, thanks for the call, Wes. I mean, one underrated part of the game last night, Joe, Cole Smith absolutely annihilated Chandler Stephenson as he was coming out of the offensive zone. That got the building going a little bit. I think got the bench going a little bit, and they were, you know, they didn't roll after that. They, you know, they gave up a big goal at the end of the second period after they had made it 3-1. And you thought, well, that's probably it. I mean, if you could have kept it 3-1 or maybe got it to 3-2 at the end of the second, you're going to have a chance in the third. Once they made it 4-1, I know I was like, you know, all right, three goals in one period against Vegas is going to be hard to accomplish. And yet that's exactly what they did, and they end up getting the win. You know, we were discussing playoff matchups earlier, and you know, I think most people would agree Colorado, Edmonton would be at the bottom of the list of first-round opponents that you want to see. There is one part of this that I think people are making way too big of a deal out of, which I understand why, because it happened in 2016. Like the travel part of it with Vancouver and Edmonton, I get it. I get to remember, though, like, The 2016 part of this was extreme. Like, they had seven games in Anaheim, yeah. And it was seven games of just, like, I mean, you know what Predators-Ducks series were like then. I mean, it was like physical hand-to-hand combat out there. San Jose was a big kind of physical team as well. And Edmonton's not really that. Vancouver's not really that. Like, it's just different matchups. So, I understand the travel part of it. Like, it feels like after 2016, nobody around here ever wants to travel again in the playoffs, and I get it. I'm not as concerned about the travel as I think other people are. I mean, the other team has to travel too.
Yeah, it's way down the list. I mean, the other team travels too. And yeah, that particular year, 16, 2-7 game series, both game sevens out there. So it's a third time out there, third time having to go out there both times, right? I mean, that, yeah, you know, that's, you're just not going to have that too often. So that's way down the list of considerations. But, I mean, you can throw it in there with why I would pick Dallas.
Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, welcoming George. George, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. A lot of things have been said about last night, and I got to say it was one of the most exciting comebacks I've ever seen. But nobody's mentioned, I don't think, yet about the number of hits. We had 37 hits. They had 17 hits. I think we're selling a lot of ice packs right now.
Yep, thanks for the call, George. I mean, the Cole Smith one we talked about was a big moment in the game. You know, Lozon was back in there last night. They paired him with Shen, and then, you know, they kind of moved some guys around. Carrier was out with an upper body injury, which, by the way, I mean, I have no inside information on Carrier, but he skated yesterday morning in the morning skate. So unless he got hurt from yesterday morning until last night's game, I don't think it's that serious with Alex Carrier. But it was good to see Lozon back in there. I thought he and Shen kind of struggled a little bit early on. I mean, the hits are important. I mean, you want to have a physically imposing team. I think the Predators do have that. You know, Shen, Lozon, that fourth line with McCarron and Smith. And look, even guys like Forsberg and O'Reilly, like, they're big dudes. Like, you're not going to push those guys around. So I think that's important. I don't want to overblow it with the hits. You know, most of the time when you have a gigantic hit gap, it means you don't have the puck quite as much. And that's not necessarily the case with the Predators because they've been hitting everything that moves all year long. But certainly, like, if you have your druthers, Joe, this time of year, you want to be a team that can initiate some physicality and can also handle it when the other team tries to dish it your way. And I do think this Predators team is equipped to do that.
Yeah, and as you go in the postseason, I think that matters too. You know, that just it turns into more the style of the game, and the Preds, the Preds can play that way. And you know, Lozon obviously has gotten a lot of accolades for what he's done, and he's been an all around good player. And yep, it's really good to have him back in the lineup.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your calls and texts on the Nashville Predators. We'll continue to break down possible playoff matchups. Take your thoughts on that as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Dramatic win for the Predators last night. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see Fallout Boy at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Sunday, March 31st. That is this Sunday. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Fall Out Boy at Bridgestone Arena coming up this Sunday, March 31st. Joe, on the playoff matchup front, so they're 4 points behind Winnipeg right now for third in the division, 4 points up on Vegas for that first wild card spot. You know, a lot's going to be made of the Winnipeg part of this. Can you catch them? Can you not? Like, honestly, I don't know that I think that that's a huge deal right now, one way or the other. Like, to me, I mean, I guess the only way it's a gigantic deal is if you are a believer in what we just talked about and you want no part of the travel, right? Because if you get third, you're playing either Dallas or Colorado. Like, if you pass Winnipeg and you get to third, you're going to play either Dallas or Colorado. That's your first round opponent. If you hang around in wild card one, well, if Vancouver finishes ahead, you're going to be playing the Central Division part of this. If like Dallas or Colorado wins the West, you'd be playing Vancouver or Edmonton if you finish in wild card one. So there's a lot of different ways this thing can go. Like, to me, and maybe, you know, I'm sure the Predators, I mean, they just want to get in. They don't really care who they play. Like, if you're operating under the assumption that I think you and I are, and like Colorado is probably not necessarily the team you want in the first round, well, it's hard to answer whether or not, you know, the getting to third in the Central is the best path, because right now it's looking like Dallas and Colorado is going to come down to the end here. I mean, Colorado [S2] Yep. [S1] Is 2 points back of Dallas, and Colorado has been right there with the Predators over the last stretch as one of the hottest teams in the league. Now, they did lose last night, but without knowing who's going to win the division at this point, and that could go down to the very last day, I can't tell you whether or not I think getting to third in the division is a big deal right now because of the matchups that all go into it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Colorado does have a game in hand, right? With Dallas?
They have one, yes, one game in hand.
Yeah, down 2 points. Yeah, I mean, I think the other day we're like, yeah, I still would guess this. I still would guess that Colorado, just because of how they've played in general, that they would end up emerging and winning the division, in which case it would definitely be worthwhile getting the three. But I don't know that. I mean, Dallas is right there. So I think it's just, obviously, this is one of those things that we do and we can do and talk about the matchups, and obviously the team. It's just, can you bring that game every night consistently? And just win as much as you can win and then see what happens at the end. Yeah. I mean, if you're worried about that stuff, I think that probably doesn't bode well for you in the playoffs. I mean, the Preds need to be thinking that they can beat anybody, and they should think that the way they're playing right now. But yeah, it really, like, winning or losing could help or hurt you at this point. It's just too hard to figure out exactly how it's all going to shake out. So,
are we selling the Stars too short in terms of, like, I think all three of us picked the Stars as the matchup that's most advantageous for the Predators. They did just waltz in here and absolutely destroy them last time that they played. Are we selling the Stars too short?
Well, I mean, I ranked them number one. It doesn't mean I ranked them as a great matchup. You know, I mean, it's just like they just happen to be of those other ones. I narrowly picked them because we have seen, and of course, like you said, the Preds have the embarrassing loss of embarrassing losses. They also have the blown game of blown games against Dallas, but for most of that game and then previous matchups, they did match up well with them. You know, I mean, that's basic. That's what I'm basing it on. You know, I mean, that's really, really nothing else. So yeah, I mean, stars could win the cup
for sure.
So nothing is an amazing matchup, but that's how the playoffs should be.
That's how the playoffs should be. And I mean, really, the one team, like, Dallas is good. I mean, I picked Dallas to win the Stanley Cup before the year. So I think Dallas is a really good team. Colorado, we know what they are. Edmonton, I think, is, you're going to see a very motivated McDavid, Draisaitl. I talked about the pressure earlier. I think there is a lot of pressure. But I also think that those two in particular, you're going to see the best that they have. And the best that they have, as we know, is pretty darn lethal. So the one team that I just have no idea what to expect when the playoffs come around is Vancouver. Like, that's the one team that I don't know. Like, they've been good all year. They have great talent. I mean, we know Pettersson and Besser and Hughes, and, you know, when Demko is healthy and he's on, they're good. So, like, all of these matchups, the Predators could certainly lose. But Vancouver is the one where, they don't have a ton of guys who have been there before. They don't have a ton of guys with playoff experience. Like, I do wonder, like, what's that going to look like for them once they get there? And at the end of the day, despite the travel, could that actually end up being the best matchup for the Predators? And, again, it's hard to answer that because I don't think they played them since, like, November.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, those are all good points. There's a newness there on both sides, and some with a lot of guys. So, look, you made the point earlier about Edmonton. I could see. I mean, we know that has been a brutal matchup for the Preds, but like psychologically, maybe yeah. that's you know maybe there is that maybe that's the most advantageous. I mean. Yeah, it's about the to me it's about the Preds and how they're can they consistently just count on certain things night after night. And you know, that's also I think it was Colton Sissons. I saw a quote from him about like when you're on a run like this, it almost can like I mean it kind of does make it harder, right? I mean the attention, the momentum and all that stuff, you have that great feeling, but also like I mean, you can't take a shift off like you feel, you know what yeah. I mean? I mean, that's a good thing, but also you would think that during a stretch this long, it would be grueling and exhausting for a team. And maybe we've seen a little bit of that in the last couple of games.
Well, and that's why I think it's important to go ahead and finish this off and get a spot clinched, because I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world to have like 2-3 games left and be able to either rest some guys or really manage the bench if you're Andrew Brunette, because there's no, I mean, look, it's been a fun run. It also has to be really taxing for them to play the way that they've played for the last month and a half at this point.
Yeah. Now, of course, somebody will answer that and say, then you get rusty and you want to be peeking at the,
sure.
But I mean, I'm with you. I mean, if you can do that and get a little bit of a break for somebody and you're not going all the way to the end, I would take that over whatever you might lose, you know, that's hard to quantify.
One thing, kind of the last point here on the Predators before we move on to Kuharsky coming up here in the next few minutes. One thing that's really interesting about this group beyond the way that they're playing right now, I haven't looked up exactly where they would rank here, but I have to think in terms of playoff experience, their roster has to be near the top of the list. I mean, obviously Colorado's got a ton of experience. Edmonton's got some guys with a lot of experience. But when you think about Ryan O'Reilly, Nyquist, Ryan McDonough, who's as experienced as anybody in the playoffs, Yossi, Forsberg, Bevilliers made deep runs with the Islanders. Zucker, I think, has 46 playoff games in his career. I mean, they got a ton of guys. Luke Shen's won cups with Tampa Bay. They got a ton of guys that have played a ton of hockey in the playoffs. And again, look, experience is nice to have. It's not everything when the playoffs come around. But I'm just saying, like, they have a ton of guys with a lot of playoff experience on this roster.
I mean, you just listed all those guys and don't mention number one center hat trick
Colton Sissons.
Game.
I know.
Colton Sissons.
Yeah.
No, it's a great list. No, they really do. It's that is kind of an interesting thing. Like, and I think people look at the Preds again, like even Adam said earlier, young team and up and coming team and all that stuff. And I mean, actually, it's there's quite a few guys, and there's a few guys who are really longer in the tooth, but in particular just some guys who are still good but they're older and they have been through these things, and that could be an advantage.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. More of your thoughts on the Predators on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll be joined here later this hour by Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com. We'll get into all things Titans with him. And he was down in Orlando this week at the NFL meetings as well. All that coming up. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Go to thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge and fill out your 16-team bracket to compete to win great prizes, including tickets to see Kings of Leon at Bridgestone Arena coming up on September the 26th. The 1025 The Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Twin Peaks, and Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com is with us here on the program. PK, good morning. How are
Greetings,
you?
Gentlemen. I need to get a couple of Kings of Leon tickets. I'm a big Kings of Leon guy.
PK, big. I would be into that.
So is Brian Callahan. I was going to ask you if you wanted to go to see, now I'm blanking out, Black Crowes next week.
Mm. Yeah, Black Crowes, you know.
Black Crowes, listen, you know. I saw him like 25 years ago at Starwood. It was one of the worst shows I've ever seen. When I met Steve Gorman, the drummer, I was like, hey, I'm a big fan of your studio work. And we had a classic conversation. But then I saw him 2 years ago at the amphitheater when they were playing Southern Harmony, a musical companion, top to bottom, and they were terrific. And I would see him again in a second. We could get in for $90.
Chris Robinson, lead singer of the Black Crowes, was at the Preds game last night, Joe.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Well, it's actually wild that we're bringing them up because I'm in East Lansing right now, about a block from my college house. And about two blocks from Rick's American Cafe, which is where they played a surprise concert in like 1994. So I guess about when they had a show here. I didn't actually go to their show here, but my friend said it was very good in 1994.
Isn't that great when you can tell college stories about bands that played that you didn't see? The Spin Doctors played at Columbia for like the better part of 2 years. Never heard of them, never saw them. Then they were at the Beacon Theater like 2 years later, all the rage, and I'm scrambling to get tickets.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, hey, thanks to the guys at Sigma Nu up at Columbia. We played there all the time. And I'm like, never heard of them.
Good stuff.
Spin Doctors, wow.
By the way, PK, when did you go to the Preds game? Because I think it was pretty close to when this either streak started.
It was
or
the first game after the break.
Yeah.
Saturday game, yeah. So that was a good luck charm.
Are you taking credit for this 18-game
Absolutely.
Run they've been on?
Absolutely. Listen, it's getting me excited. I'm just surprised it hasn't come with a bigger climb in the standings. And I'm listening to you guys talk about, you know, where they could wind up. But I certainly hope it comes with a big playoff performance and they're not using it all up now and that they can carry it into a big playoff charge. It'd be great.
Yep, been a lot of fun to watch. So PK is back from Orlando this week down at the NFL owners meetings. You caught up with Amy Adams Strunk. DeAndre Hopkins was wandering around down there. Lots of good coverage at PaulKuharsky.com. I want to start with some rule changes here, and we can all kind of get into this. So the kickoff rule gets approved yesterday where you're basically lined up 10 yards across from each other. It's the XFL-style rule. The idea is to, number one, eliminate some of these collisions that we see on kickoffs, and number two, try to get more returns actually in the game. What do you all make of the kickoff rule, what it's going to look like, and do we think this is actually going to lead to a more exciting play on the kickoff return?
I do. I think the first thing it does is it makes the preseason a little interesting. Like, you'll want to watch the kickoffs in the preseason. I think some guys who don't generally play special teams might play special teams. I talked to Rand Carthon about this yesterday. And he said another thing. He said, there are a couple teams that have guys that can kick who are not kickers who you might see kick in this situation because you're not looking to smash it. And if you can get it into the zone, you get another guy on the field as a coverage player who is running up with some steam that could add interest to it. But I just think the intrigue of something different will carry the interest of the fans. But, look, I want to see the play be interesting, but I don't want to see contrived stuff. And this is contrived stuff. But I don't know how you get the play to be interesting without contrived stuff. And that's the conversation I had with Chad Brinker, with Rand Carthon, with Brian Callahan, with other people. And I don't know how you do it without contrived stuff. So I'll wait to see. But I do think it's going to be interesting to watch. It's funny that Jed York of the 49ers was one of the three teams that voted against it. And the reason he voted against it is because he wanted the ability to in-season tweak it as they see the unintended consequences. And nobody wanted, obviously, to in-season tweak it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, the kickoff has been largely taken out of the game. And I understand why. I'm intrigued by this. I think it gives it a chance to be a play, you know, a play that's an actual football play again, for the most part. I do not like, we talked about this yesterday, PK, but The hip drop thing, I think, is going to be a disaster. It's going to be enforced kind of like the PI review rule of a couple years ago, where it's so rarely called that
I don't think it's out after a year. I don't think it's going to be called in the game much. I don't think it's intended to be called in the game much. I think it's intended to be officiated on Monday with the letter in your locker on Wednesday.
Well, that's fine.
And they'll hash it out that way. I also think people are thinking it's much bigger than it is. It's not hip drop. It's a swivel hip drop. A lot of people were throwing out pictures of Kevin Dyson with Mike Jones. That is not illegal under what they're doing here. Mike Jones
it's
made
like
a
the
textbook
twist.
Tackle. He did not twist him, and he did not land on his legs. So I think educating the public is a big thing here. And that's what I asked Rich McKay. I said, look, people during the broadcast are going to be talking about was it or wasn't it. Fans and media are going to be talking about was it or wasn't it. Are we going to have to wait till Saturday to get the answer on was it or wasn't it? And they basically said, yeah. And I think that's a mistake in terms of educating the public. But what they want is first and foremost to educate the players. And I don't think that's a bad second layer of officiating that, players get letters and they officiate it out of the game with hopefully reasonable fines. And coaching during the week, like Vrabel always did the film on Fridays. This isn't, and we work on it during the week. We can't do this. We can't do this. We can't do this. And gradually it disappears. And you haven't seen the head down stuff. Is like there were like 12 of those last year. What, 3 years after they put the rule in?
Yeah,
it gradually disappears, and it's a rather effective way of doing it. Even. Despite the out rule.
So defensive players right now have been really vocal about this week, but you don't think it's going to end up being that big of a deal in terms of them having to change the way that they go about tackling people on a grand scale?
On a grand scale, I don't think so. And, McKay said officials can call it, but they have to very clearly see all three elements. It really gives the officials an out to not call it. In the game, and I think officials would probably, a lot of times, roughing the passer, you're supposed to err on the side of calling it. On this, I think they've given them permission to err on the side of not calling it, and we'll deal with it on Monday.
615-737, go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, and look, if the fines are steep for when they're really bad, that's great, but that's how I hope it plays out, as opposed to constantly, calling this and giving the offense another edge.
Yeah, and I don't think we want officials worrying about yet another three-part foul that you have to tick off a checklist in your head when you're already missing stuff and stuff is already incredibly fast. I don't want to add to officials' stack of stuff to consider in the heat of the moment with the speed of the moment.
Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. You can check it out every morning here
nervous.
On the program.
Oh,
see
I'm
if
not.
Rex Road brings it today. Yeah. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road. 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
No one wants to be a part of that. No one wants to see that ugliness. But I can tell you this, I wish she would have pushed Angel Reese. Don't push a kid that you 6'8", don't push somebody that little. That was uncalled for, in my opinion. Let those two girls that were jawing, let them go at it.
Kind of ugly, though.
It's that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. Great time, kind of ugly, though.
That was not
Kim,
about her,
right?
By the way.
That was Kim.
That was Kim.
That was Kim Mulkey.
Can I just quickly comment on Kim?
Yeah, quickly.
Yeah. When the Washington Post gets to the point that it gives you a list of questions, it's been trying to get you to comment for 2 years. Yeah. Don't cry about saying they're insisting I answer questions right now in the middle of things. They haven't given you 2 weeks. They've given you 2 years.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. This is my rant. Be quiet for a minute. Thank you. God.
Got to be quicker.
Trying
Chief.
To take over the whole station.
Got
to
be quicker.
Well,
Chief.
Okay.
All right. I retract everything I just said.
Okay.
That's how you do it, quick and tight, Chief.
Don't do dumb to hurt the team.
Okay, everyone quiet. Okay, here we go. Yes, I want to talk about Mulkey. She's the LSU women's basketball coach. I want to talk about Kent Babb, too. He's a Washington Post reporter who's actually one of the best reporters writing about the sports world in our country, has been for quite a while. Best as in thorough, detailed, precise, ethical, all the things that anyone should want in someone in our business, because really integrity is the only thing that really matters. And, you know, it gets questioned a lot by at Fred for Freedom 869-342-666 like never before, for no other reason than people don't like what the messenger has for them a lot of times. So full disclosure on Kent Babb. I'm friends with him, been for about 15 years. I know this is just more glorious name dropping on my part, but, you know, Kaharsky knows how that goes. But I think it's important to note, one, because in any, you talk about this stuff, you'd always be accused of bias. But also, it means that I know things about Kent Babb. One, he likes the musical artist Meatloaf way too much. Two, he's a lot like our friend Charles Robinson. And that is a reporter who goes way, way deep on things to the point that he sometimes spends years on stories, like this forthcoming story on Kim Mulkey. You know, Charles, we've talked about this. He spent like 2 years living in Florida, you know, blowing open this Miami Hurricanes cheating, you know, scheme under Nevin Shapiro, who was in prison and gave him all the, I mean, you know, these are the type of things they work on. Like Babb, an example of him would be a story he did on Kobe Bryant. He got access to him. He followed around for a long time. He wrote this very complicated, in-depth and fair story on Bryant and basically like his post-basketball life shaped by the sexual assault charges that were dropped. I mean, it's a really great story if anybody wants to find that on the internet. I know everybody's waiting for this one on the internet. Here's one thing with both Charles and Kent and their stories that is guaranteed. A team of lawyers goes through every freaking line, every source, every word uttered in these stories. It is vetted as much as you can vet something, okay? So I was texting with Babb. He's on spring break right now. His wife, his kids, waiting for this story to publish, and I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know exactly what's in it. I do know that Mulkey, thank you, Paul, had a preemptive strike a few days ago talking about how unfair it was that Babb sent her a bunch of questions, gave her 48 hours to answer after 2 years of refusing to answer his questions. So, look, I'm keeping an open mind on all this, on the story, and you know, there's going to be people to defend her. I don't know, don't know what's in it, but I do know this. I'm not keeping an open mind on the idea that this was some unfair hit job by, in Mulkey's words on Babb, a, quote, sleazy reporter. I mean, by that rationale, then, everybody in media is sleazy, and that I can tell you is a load of crap, as is the idea that she'll have a remote opportunity of successfully suing anyone on this story.
She was obviously really out in front of that the other day. It turned into a distraction for the LSU team, and she, you know, was brought up again the other day in her post-game press conference about this story that's forthcoming. Again, like you said, I mean, we don't know what's in it at this point, so we're just going to have to wait and see.
She turned it into a distraction.
But she, I mean, obviously, whatever's coming, she is concerned about it because she got heavily out in front of it the other day and tried to derail the whole thing. So I'm with you, Joe. I have no idea what it is. Well, I'll read it, keep an open mind to what's going on, but it was an interesting strategy by Kim Mulkey the other day.
Well, and you know, it's one of these things where, I mean, there's a lot of reaction, and I mean, you know, Twitter or whatever the hell it's called. I mean, it's sometimes the worst place to try to figure out the human race, but, you know, of course you have these people screaming, it's just, oh, making crap up, and you know, and it's just like, okay, I mean, that's what she's trying to get that, she's trying to get out in front of that and get that going, get that ball rolling, sleazy reporter. And I mean, look, I promise you she lied about some of the stuff she said too, which is like, she basically claimed that he's like, you'll have anonymous, I'll give you an anonymity if you'll say negative things about her. Yeah, okay, Kim. Okay, sure. And first of all, I don't know the origin. Usually these stories, I mean, I'd say 90%+ of the time start with someone coming to a reporter, not the other way around, right? And so, you know, we'll see. I promise you there will be on the record sources too, you know, named sources. There will be documentation. There'll be a lot of things in this. And, you know, the fact that it's out there early is for, like you said, being worried. It is also interesting that Pat Forty tweeted about this story last week. I found that a little bit strange.
Yeah, she did a good job of promoting this story, frankly.
She did. She got people excited about it.
I mean, people like me and you are going to publish. People like me and you are going to eat it up for the journalism of it, and because we're interested in Kim Mulkey. but other people who maybe wouldn't have gone there are now anticipating it.
Exactly. And it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, that site's going to crash.
The site is going to crash. Like when it comes out, there's going to be a lot of reaction to it. And, you know, she is, I guess, unique is probably the best way to put it in terms of the way that she handles things sometimes. When we played the clip coming into the segment there about after the altercation between her team and South Carolina in the women's championship game. I mean, there's an edge to her. There's no question about that. And look, the results are what they are. She's been a great coach in terms of wins and losses on the court. But I've always, and you've talked about this, Joe, her likability is not really up there. Likability is it struggles a little bit. And you know, the outfits are one thing, but just the way that she handles some of these situations. And I thought the South Carolina game was a great example. It's like, be a little bit more mature with the way that you handle things sometimes publicly. And I'm interested to see when this does come out, how she responds to it.
And while we're on the topic of women's basketball, a much more likable coach, Megan Griffin, of the Columbia Lions, who got an at-large bid to the tournament and nearly knocked out Vanderbilt, despite a terrible performance from Ivy League Player of the Year. I had a lovely email exchange with the coach.
Nice.
Encouraging her, and she was enthusiastic about my support. A big booster, without the financial part.
Yeah.
A big verbal booster
big
of the program.
Emotional booster.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for driving this rant right into the ground. That's
go.
Wonderful.
Well, I mean, I did the rant. I did the rant in two sentences, and we could have moved on. But then I let you go. Let's rant about this. Why do you drive to Detroit? Like, will the Athletic not fly you to places?
Because I came to see my kid early, and I'm taking him stuff. I took him stuff, and I'm also taking some stuff out of his.
How much?
Well,
stuff?
He's moved. Well, Paul, what happens when you go to college? You live in dorms. I had a box of stuff that he needed, and then I'm taking a couple bags of stuff out of his dorm to bring home to lighten the load for move out day.
I have this fear that you love to drive places, despite the fact that your company will pay.
I do like drive. I do.
An hour out of the way last week to barbecue.
I got a problem with that.
I'm a driver, but typically I'm 4 to 6 is the range, and then from there I'll fly.
And how far is Detroit?
Like people flying to Indy to me is just like, what, dude? It's 4 hours.
How far is Detroit?
Get in the car. 8.
Yeah. That's too long to drive, Chief.
Right. And I wouldn't have done it except for what I just told you.
Except for this box.
How would you grade Rex Rand's rant today? Even though you
have
to start.
Having an extra
I mean, if I hadn't gone first, it would have been reasonably good. But I need to not speak at the beginning of Rex Rhodes' rant segment, obviously. I apologize, Joe. Stole your thunder.
Thank you. That's fine.
We'll have more with Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com coming up next. All things Titans for the next hour. We'll take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.